It would probably be best if we say again, we're here with Hannah Combs, the executive director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum, and Reed Weber, an architect with Northroot Architecture, and also, are you a member of the Historical Society, Reed?
I am, actually, as of last year now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what have you guys been collaborating on?
Yeah, why is he here with you, Hannah? What's he doing here?
Yeah, so Reed and I have been friends for years, and with a few other people we will talk about in a minute, we have been collaborating on a sort of passion project that is a kind of the meeting point of all of our varied interests. So this has been a deep dive into the history of a single property in Sandpoint that's currently being developed. And through that property, we've been exploring some of the bigger concepts of development and historic preservation that are top of mind for a lot of people right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the property that we have featured in this exhibit, so I guess that's the big announcement, this project has culminated in an exhibit that's currently on display at Evans Brothers.
I was there last night and for a four-hour meeting, and I found my eyes just, whoever put that together, amazing. Go over to Evans Brothers and plan to spend a chunk of time there because it's really riveting. I was going to bring that up. I didn't know that that was...
Well, thanks,
your magic.
Yeah, that's kind of the end result of all of our work this time.
How long will that be up?
That'll be at Evans Brothers and for a month and a half.
Get down there.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, 9 o'clock after this show, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Go down. It is fascinating, and it's a reading one. You have to spend your time, get a cup of coffee, and just go around. It wraps around. And it's well done, too.
We're lucky that everyone at Evans Brothers is very friendly because you will have to lean
wonderful.
Over people to
and
really
to
read every
the
caption.
Yes. Okay. But talk more about it.
Yeah. So I'll let Reed talk about how this kind of started. But the property that we wound up focusing on is the El Sasser Homestead. So it's on North Boyer, and it was torn down in 2021. And that's kind of our starting point on this project.
Yeah, it was kind of around that time that we were also seeing a lot of changes happening in our small town, which I'm sure everyone's aware of with just this growth that's occurring. And not that change is a bad thing, but just realizing that seeing across Boyer, what was the old U of I property, a lot of homes going up and a kind of clearing of that. And then seeing the property across the way, this Boyer El Sasser homestead, starting to change too, and this old farmhouse that I had always had just driven by growing up in the area, never quite knew the story of it, and then maybe took it for granted a little bit at that time. But and then seeing that, okay, there's starting to be clearing here, there's cutting down trees, that means there's some sort of development occurring, and what's kind of wanted to learn some more about it.
Is that on the east side of Boyer or on the west side of Boyer?
It's on the northwest corner of the Boyer and East Mountain View intersection. So if you're familiar with the U of I property, which is on the east side.
On the east side.
This is going to be just catty corner to that
on the north end. So it's on the west side?
Yes.
Closer to the airport, yeah.
Boy, they are building up that area like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That whole strip, yeah.
And I had a similar experience. It's a house I've driven by for years and always had a strange fondness for that I couldn't really articulate.
Mm-hmm.
But how I first became aware of the development, one of the guys who was excavating, he was one of the excavators on the demolition of this property, came to the museum with his family, and he was curious about the history of the property and asked for photos at the museum so he could understand more about the house that he was tearing down. And through our conversation and learning that I was interested in what was happening there, he said that we could go out and visit the property and do take any photos or other find other ways to document.
So structures were still standing on the property at that time?
At that time, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So he gave us an open invite to go over there for the next week or two before they actually tore down the structures.
So when would have this been in time?
This was September of 2021.
Okay, so a year ago last September. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was around that time we also kind of wanted to document or memorialize the structure that had this end date coming up. And so we had a Kit Mitchell Photography come out, and he's a real estate photographer. And so we wanted to kind of take his expertise in that world and displaying homes and realty magazines and actually apply it to this somewhat dilapidated farmhouse that's over 100 years old and with, you know, dry rot in the boards and things. So there's just a lot of character that we just wanted to capture in a beautiful way.
Through some of our early research, I can't guarantee this. If anyone has more information, please let me know. But to my knowledge, through this project, I believe that this farmhouse was the oldest remaining homestead house left within Sandpoint city limits. It was built in, that structure was built in 1896.
And who owned it in September of, I was going to say 2021.
Who owned it? At that point, it had passed through a few hands. It had been a rental.
Mm-hmm,
So by the time that it was being torn down, there was a development company that had purchased it develop the property.
So how good of them to let you have access to the property and take photographs and that sort of thing. So where does that property stand now?
Yeah, currently it's been since approved with the city that there's going to be a subdivision going in with, I think, 20 new single family homes going there at the current Sandpoint market rate.
They've put in the road and there's some lampposts that you can see, but they haven't started building any new houses there yet.
Okay, so how does the society and museum come into play? And with you, Reed, with all of what's happening with this property, where are we at now?
Where are we at now?
In terms of, I would think that there would be history on the side.
Yeah. So I think a lot of that has come together through the project we've been working on.
Okay.
This has kind of been a passion project for us and our team. It's not something that the property owners necessarily asked us to do. This mm-hmm, has been a little mm-hmm. bit extracurricular from my work at the museum. So this has just been a project that we've all felt really interested in and curious to learn more about this specific property, the stories of the people who live there, and through that, learn more about how development works in our town.
Right.
So that
right.
we have a better understanding and ability to participate in those conversations in our community.
Yeah. Well, what did you guys learn? I mean, what is the history of the 130 years of this building? Where's it? What starts it? Who built it and why? How about that?
Yeah. So I guess it kind of, this specific property starts with the originally being purchased through the Homestead Act.
Mm-hmm.
In 18, handing those these
yeah,
dates.
Yeah, yeah. So the Homestead Act was enacted during the Civil War, and people took advantage of that program all over the country. Idaho, of course, became a part of it a little bit later because we're further west, and the West was less developed back in those days. But I think we found out that about 18% of Idaho's total land area was developed through the Homestead Act and through claims that...
And this was before it was a state.
That's correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we gained statehood in, oh my gosh, fact check me on this, in 1890? Is that correct?
That sounds correct.
I think
okay.
that's right.
Mm-hmm. And Sandpoint itself was starting to become developed as a town around 1882 when the railroad started coming through town. So at that point, Sandpoint itself was kind of on the east side of the tracks near City Beach, on the east side of Sand Creek near City Beach. But there were some more adventurous folks who would start making homestead claims in more rural parts of town, where you could claim, through the Homestead Act, each person who applied could claim 160 acres.
Boy, that's a chunk.
Exactly. It is really neat. In our exhibit, Reed created a few maps that show the total land area that these two brothers we'll talk about were able to claim through the Homestead Act. And it's a significant portion of town.
Right. It's about a half. They each own about half mile by a half mile square. Just there on Boyer, going east and then going west. And one side, one brother owned part of Sand Creek, and the other brother owned where the airport is today, a good chunk of that land.
Wow.
So there were these two brothers, William and John Elsasser. Their family had recently relocated to Texas, but they were younger brothers of the family. And seemed pretty adventurous based on the travels we discovered they had taken to get up here. But they came up to North Idaho. They did some mining, some hunting, trapping, worked in a pole yard, and went back to visit family. John got married, and then they came back up and staked their claim. They had adjoining properties, and I thought it was really sweet that the two of them, it seems, remained really close through their lives, and their properties really mirrored each other on each side of what is now Boyer Avenue. So John's property is the one that we've been researching. That was the last one to come down. I believe William's house came down around 2000, which would have been on the east side of Boyer there. But they each had a cabin, and then later they each had a farmhouse that looked identical. And so it was just really sweet to see how they developed their homes there together.
So each one had 160 acres, so together 320 acres, which is significant.
They actually had more of like a half of that 160, I think it came out to be. So for whatever reason, like the typical homesteaders would have 160 acres, but in this case, they only got a portion of those sections, those mm-hmm, in the town. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure in that era how those were decided or who what acreage
but it would have extended, if you combine both of their properties, it would have extended from the airport all the way to cross Sand Creek. Mm-hmm.
So what I find interesting is this is way before Sandpoint was ever growing or whatever. It was located right around where we're sitting now or standing now, and so that property would have been out there.
Oh, yeah. Now the property is within city limits.
Absolutely, yeah.
But back then, the photos, they're really in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, they would have had to traipse through these dark forests at night if they wanted to go to the market or the next day or in the morning.
They actually had to build their own personal bridge across Sand Creek in order to get to town.
No kidding. Wow. Well, so is this part of a larger project of old homesteads in the area, or
we never know what it could turn into in the future, but at this point it has been we've focused on this one specific property. I think in a way taking this really close look at a single property is a little bit easier to understand. It's really easy when we're talking about property development and city planning and things like that for the conversation to get so big that it's hard to really understand what's going on. And I think this is the way we focused on this one property mm-hmm. makes it easier to connect to the story.
Yeah. And I think there's this specific property is like a nice way to tell this thread of how Sandpoint grew from its inception. But yeah, I think we even during the last year and a half of our meetings discussing how this could like how we could change things in the future, what this group could turn into if it is kind of looking at other historic buildings that maybe be at risk in some way, and kind of this part of our urban and historical fabric that are there ways to show that this is a valued asset to our community, and maybe instead of kind of being after the fact memorializing a building, maybe we can get out ahead of this and do something about it prior.
Did you have any aha moments as you were working your way through this project? You go, whoa, I never imagined that. As you investigated this homestead and took photographs?
Yeah, I think even just kind of thinking about Sandpoint of that era, again, in like the 1900s and 1910s, and at that exhibit at Evans Brothers, there's kind of a comparison of what Sandpoint was even in 1900, and then 10 years later, or in 1900, most of it was on the east side of the Sand Creek, built off the railroad tracks, and then that literal flip where they demoed some buildings on the east side, and the whole the downtown as we know it today was created. Just seeing that transition in 10 years, and it's people at that time, we were reading through it, they kind of had similar gripes and groans about a changing town and the rural character adjusting as well. And so that's just been like a common thread in humanity, I think, over the decades. So,
yeah, it's it was also surprising to me, being pretty familiar with the museum's archives, that we were able to find as much information as we did about this particular property. I think there are very few places, homes, personal homes in town that have been as well documented as this one. And that's because the guys who lived there were pretty prominent citizens. There's a lot of information in the newspapers, but it was both exciting to find that depth of information on this one property, and also it made me a little sad to know that most places are not well documented like that. And there is so much history that can be lost really easily if we don't take the time to share the stories of the places that we live and the people who've lived there. And I think one thing I hear a lot of times when I talk to people about their own personal stories of their lives or their homes and things like that is, you know, I'll ask a question like, oh, can you tell me more about that? And they'll say, oh, why would you want to know about that? That's not important. That's not exciting. And you know, every person's story is interesting and important, and it's through collecting all of these little stories that you we're able to
major
tell
narrative.
The big story of our community. Yeah. So I just want to encourage anyone who has doubts about whether their story is worth telling. It absolutely is. And that is one thing we can do at the museum is help share your story through oral histories or just by...
Or any photos. Artifacts yeah. like letters or photographs
absolutely.
Or everything. We're here with Hannah Combs from the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. And with Reed Weber, architect, talking about property on Boyer, that was a homestead. Let's take a music break and come back then and talk more about this. I've got several other. This is a song that I, you know, when I did music on this date for March 16th, said it was released on this date, but I checked other sources and they said January of 63 it was released. So January. But I'm going to go with this date because I like this song and it's controversial. If you can believe that Peter, Paul, and Mary did a controversial song, this is one that we'll all recognize. So, Jack, play it.
Peter, Paul, and Mary with Puff the Magic Dragon. James.
Only when my mother was mad at me would I get called that.
Would you explain to us what are your feelings towards Puff the Magic Dragon, and why was it so controversial?
Well, it was controversial because they thought it was about smoking dope, Puff the Magic Dragon, and I just thought it was, you know, little Jackie Paper loved his, you know, I just, you know, and then he grows up, and but the dragon lives forever. You know, it was back in, you know, where they looked at the lyrics to Louie, 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 you know, trying to find that it was subversive and corrupting the minds of fragile youth like me.
And is there any truth to the fact that it's secretly about?
I don't know. Yeah. It's sort of like a Rorschach test, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for something, you can find it, you know. You know, but I just think it's a beautiful song, and my Peter, Paul, and Mary would never do anything subversive.
No, in their matching outfits, and I wouldn't think so. No, you're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. We're here with Hannah Combs and Reed Weber. Hannah is the executive director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. Reed is an architect with Northroot Architecture, and he's been working with the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum on researching a property, the L. Sasser property out on North Boyer, a recently demolished homestead from the late 19th century. We were talking about that and your research on it when we took our last break here. What happened to the property after when the original owners passed away? This one was in the family, right? Or this was the fellow, this was the brother who had a wife and kids, right? Did it stay in the family for a while, or?
Yeah, well, for one of the brothers, John's. Mm-hmm. John on the, like I said, be the western side of Boyer.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up selling the property to artists and Fats Rasko in the 1940s.
Fats Rasko?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
All those artists.
Yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Fats was worked at the city infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And then artists was, well, maybe you can speak more about his background.
They were characters, like fascinating lives. Artists. I think her job was working for the school district. The one anecdote we found about her was that she would drive the superintendent around to meetings and things like that. But the car she drove, I'm trying to remember what it was, but it had flower baskets hanging out of the windows of it. Is that right?
Right.
And who knows, maybe that was just her personal flair.
Mm-hmm.
But she was also, they were really instrumental in starting the Sandpoint Saddle Club. So big into the equestrian world in town.
And one of the vests on display in Evans Brothers, a sparkly, you know, glitters in the dark. Beautiful. That caught my eye.
Yeah. As someone who's really into costume history, I love the costumes from the Sandpoint Saddle Club because they are so over the top, bedazzled in the most delightful ways. But you also really see the ingenuity of the people who made them, because they would usually just take clothes that they had, and then they would add sequins. In that vest, if you look really closely, you'll see, I can't remember if it's a brooch or a pair of earrings. I think it has both. But there are little pieces of jewelry that they've actually sewn into it just for a little extra glitter.
Just ingenious, yeah. It's the great fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'll add that artists, they would have after school horse riding lessons for kids right there in town there. So can just we actually had a local illustrator work with us on this project. Owen Lisi from Sandpoint High School, and he recreated these moments in history, like kind of snapshots that we only read about, but he kind of brought them to life. And so you can see artists there with kind of teaching these kids after school and horse riding, and that experience with Fats on the side, who is a hobbyist photographer with his camera. And you can also see her driving around the superintendent with her flower potted adorned vehicle.
Was it still a huge, mostly undeveloped tract of land at that point in the 40s? Was it still, what, the 80 acres, I guess?
Yeah, that we couldn't find specifics on like how it was and when it was divided and split. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of documentation that they did subdivide and just kind of sell off chunks over time to, I think, mostly homeowners. Mm-hmm. And then when the airport on the west side came through, we couldn't find a date on that either. But so there was some, I imagine, sort of eminent domain occurring within these properties as well.
Yeah, yeah, they were. It was interesting as we were trying to understand more about development and developers today, learning that these two brothers were actively developing their properties in the early 1900s when they owned them by selling.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, by selling different plots of land to other families in the area to build houses on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it, like another interesting anecdote about that time was how they, you know, came in pretty much before Sandpoint was a town, and then eventually butting up with the city infrastructure growing. And so these two kind of homesteaders who maybe, I don't know what their thoughts were at the time, but there was an anecdote about them opposing putting Boyer Avenue through their two properties where they split now. So it's just like interesting that the time that Humbert Mill and another large company, the railroad company, wanted to put in this road, and these brothers were the only two dissenters against it.
Which is, I think that's just such a good example of how these types of projects work and how people feel about them. I imagine for everyone else in town, for these businesses, certainly they're saying, you know, this would be an excellent way to transport goods or have easy access to our businesses. For other people in town, they're probably saying, oh, yeah, like a road that goes to the north side of town would be really handy for visiting neighbors or, you know, accessing whatever goods are up there. But for these brothers, the road literally cut right between their properties when they had had this really close connection all of those years of just walking back and forth to visit each other. Probably share dinner and things like that. So,
are there any descendants of those brothers still in the area or in town?
Not that I know of in town, but we were able to work with two of their descendants. I think these would be their great-granddaughters at this point.
Okay.
And they were actually, we would not have been able to do this exhibit without them. They provided a lot of extra family photos that the museum did not have. And so their documentation and sharing their family archives really helped us put this together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think having that museum as a resource is just an amazing, like we just uncovered so much information there that I never thought we'd have from the beginning. I thought it'd just be a series of photographs about this old farmhouse, and then that was going to be it, and we'd have an exhibit about that maybe in a year, and then we uncovered this wealth of knowledge that you can see on display at Evans Brothers today.
Yeah. And it was at this point, it was the oldest surviving, like, residential building in Sandpoint, as far as you know?
As far as I know.
And now it's not surviving anymore.
Yeah, I have not seen records of any other homes that are still around from that period. We do have quite a few houses and commercial buildings in town that are still from around 1901 through 1910 when Sandpoint was first developing, but I haven't run across any other houses quite that old.
Okay. And there it goes. Well, I'm glad you guys were able to document it before it went away. And now there is a road there and streetlights, is I think what you said.
Yeah, and soon there will be houses, and those will provide homes for community members, which is a great thing. But it was interesting through this project, especially with Reed's expertise as an architect, to examine some of the ways that even though development is going to happen, even though housing is very much a needed commodity in our community, are there ways that we can honor or give a nod to the history of a site even when the property is being developed. And I think you did a great job of communicating some of those possibilities in the exhibit.
Yeah, just kind of thinking about what are ways to maybe stop and slow down and looking at what's existing on a property. Are there ways we can even, you know, work around these historical or significant things that give Sandpoint the character that we've all kind of love here? And it is, yeah, interesting that kind of one of our thesis statements or at the end of this is just like the things that make Sandpoint wonderful in this draw, while also like the value to developers or people coming here. And they're simultaneously kind of removing these things that make it a really beautiful, wonderful place by tearing down historical structures to put up homes and things. it's kind of the catch there.
Yeah, I think there are different ways to look at this. There is sort of the like beauty for beauty's sake. Like, we want to save buildings because they're lovely and remind us of the past. There's also the very practical, like, monetary incentive. And I think we've seen this through so many studies that historic character adds value to properties. And so even if you don't have like a really strong emotional connection to a place, one of my hopes is that incentive will remain to preserve or at least honor the history of a place, knowing that it will add actual, you know, monetary value to a site as well.
Yeah, and I think like growth can occur in this town, and it's going to happen. And I think how we develop and how, maybe if we can slow down and not just put in the immediate obvious answer, which would be, or the simplest answer, which is to kind of level a site and
move on
and sell it in 2 years and you're on to the next one. Looking at the property for what will the property be like in 20 years and 50 years, and how will that in return contribute to the citizens, if it's housing mixes of affordability, if it's creating a park that kids will play in the next 100 years or more. And so just kind of thinking beyond the immediate payback is kind of our question.
And it is a lot. I mean, as we know, it's taken a year and a half to really research this property and learn everything about it. It is a lot of work to put into learning about a site. And I hope that the museum can be a resource for developers, for homeowners and builders to come. And we are actually seeing a lot of that right now. We're seeing a lot of people coming to the museum and saying, hey, I'd love to learn more about this house I just bought.
Perfect.
It has a lot of character. I want to know more about the people who lived here. And it's really neat to see people embracing that and wanting to learn about their properties. And I do believe those are resources that we can provide to the community to help them do some of the legwork to better understand their properties and then find ways
to... The story behind their property, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Can you talk a little bit more about what's at Evans Brothers in terms of, I know it's on three walls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess this exhibit, to kind of back up to and talk about who was involved in putting it on, beyond Hannah and myself, also my mom, Cynthia Dalsing, was involved in this project since the beginning as well, and helped us immensely with the research, and she was a huge resource at the museum. And then Emily Erickson, my fiance, so it was also, it's all the family here, I guess, but she's a contributing writer and just providing thoughts and helping with the design of this whole exhibit. And then, yeah, the display itself kind of takes you through, starting with the kind of early or late 1800s, so the timeline of this property and how it did change over time to its kind of current state. But there's also, some artifacts of the eras that we came across over the decades.
A lantern?
So I think you're probably referring to the trophy. There's a...
Oh, is that the trophy?
Yeah. Up high.
Up high, yes.
Yeah. It's a trophy that was presented by William L. Sasser to the winner of the best apples at the county fair in 1912.
And then the vest. So there are some artifacts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have the original deed of the homestead as well on the wall. The artist's vest from her time with the Saddle Club. And then actually, some wallpaper from the house that was torn down as well is on display.
Yeah. So it is really neat to see the exhibit come to life. We had so many other volunteers who contributed to this project at different stages. We had a team of volunteers who helped us with the research portion, and then everything from that up to the exhibit installation. It was really neat to see that come together. We had a whole team of people helping, you know, hang up displays and paint the walls and do everything we needed to get that done.
So what's next?
I think we all need a little bit of a break just to refresh our minds. This has been a huge project, way bigger mm-hmm. than I ever expected, but so meaningful. It's added so much to my life and understanding of these topics that are a little heady, a little hard to understand. But it's been a really meaningful project, and I hope people who see the exhibit get something out of it and that it sparks conversations.
Well, thanks to both of you for taking time out, and go to Evans Brothers and catch the display. It is well worth seeing. And will you keep the radio station on your radar when you have another project that you're heading towards?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Cool. Anything you want to say, Jack, before we play the song to usher out?
No, I just wanted to ask what else is going on at the museum itself outside of Evans Brothers. Is there anything else we should know about over there?
Oh, of course. So we are currently polishing our plans for summer events. Uh-huh. But we are having our Free First Saturdays, of course. That's every first Saturday of the month. We're open from 10 to 2, and the museum admission is free on those days. That's very exciting. We are also planning a new lecture series this year, which we haven't quite finalized, but we're hoping one of the first topics will be on the history of the railroads in the area. So the rail fans, you know, keep an eye out. Oh, yes. Yeah. So
when would that be?
We're looking at the end of April, but we'll be
ooh, and we have some openings in April. Hint, hint.
Yeah, you're right. End of April would be good. Anyway, okay, so you got talks coming up. The museum is open, otherwise your regular hours, not Saturdays,
other than the first one. Yes. Yeah. So our regular hours are Tuesday through Fridays from 10 to 4. And you can stop by to look at the exhibits. You can stop by to do some research. We also do photo orders, all of those things you can just pop in and we'll help you out with. We are also planning our next big temporary exhibit, which won't open until November. But it's going to be a very playful one. And I'll just leave it at that for now.
Okay.
Let's close out with a question both Reed and I had about the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. Where does the word society come in at?
Oh, man, I need to do my research on
this
one. I think it's just sort of a, I think it actually started, I want to say with the, is it the Royal Society in London? Back during the Enlightenment, when they were first starting to do explorations all over the world and bring back scientific specimens, and everyone was really into science, and I'm not quite sure where the word society comes from, but I imagine it harkens back to that and the fact that there were all of these professionals gathering to learn and to share their expertise. And I think it's sort of a word that's carried on from there. So in the context of the Bonner County Historical Society, we are a group of members and people who are all passionate about history, who all have a special area of expertise and interest in our local history.
Mm. It sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to belong to a society, and I can now. Wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thank you, Hannah, and thank you, Reed.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Yeah, and we'll play just a short song.
It is a short song.
It is a short song. It's a Beatles song that was released on this date, March 16th, 1964. And there's a little bit of interesting history behind it. It comes from Hard Day's Night, a song called Can't Buy Me Love.
Can't buy me love.